En we hebben hiervoor aan de lijn meneer Kamel Mahdi. Good afternoon, Mr. Mahdi.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to our show. You are a Iraqi exile in the UK. How did you end up in the UK?
Well, I have been in the UK for a long time. I stayed and did not go back to the time of Saddam Hussein. It was difficult to be in opposition. In opposition to that regime, and difficult to accept the immorality and the repression that was prevalent under that regime. I've stayed. I've returned a couple of times to Iraq after 2003, but again, I cannot accept the reality of occupation that's now imposed on Iraq.
Yes, and one of your criticisms is about the Iraqi oil law. There's a draft version was issued in January and another one in February. What's the problem with this law?
Well, first of all, the question is why is a law being issued at this time? What is the purpose of this law? The reality is that the only and major purpose the law, the sole purpose for which the law is being hurried now, is to open the Iraq's oil resources to private ownership, and particularly to ownership by the multinational corporations. And this has been demanded by the International Monetary Fund, and it's been demanded by the U.S. government, and now the U.S. Congress as well has put that as a demand of the Iraqi government. Really, none of those parties should have anything to do with how Iraq manages its oil resources. In fact, Iraq's oil was in very large measure developed by the public sector, and it was really constrained by international action, by international sanctions against Iraq, and also by, of course, the wars that have taken place. So it is not a case that it is more efficient to run the oil sector in any other way. It is simply the interests that have come with the war that are imposing themselves.
Yes, well, something I should have mentioned before, you are a bit of an expert in the area because you are lecturing Middle East economics in
that's
Exeter.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Now, so could you tell something about the situation before the invasion? So how was there was a national oil company under the control of Saddam Hussein, I assume?
Yes. There was a national oil company, but the reality is before the invasion, of course, there was also international sanctions against Iraq imposed since 1990. And in fact, between 1980 and 1990, the oil sector was also constrained by the war, because it's much of it is really in a war zone. And certainly the main export terminals are in were in a war zone during the Iran-Iraq war.
It's near Basra then, probably.
Near Basra, the main terminals are there, and they were closed from 1980 to 1988. Really, the oil sector had suffered not through the failures of the public sector, as is being suggested. It has suffered through the political imposition, and this is really another political imposition at the moment. Now, before the Saddam regime, in fact, was willing to compromise and deal with the foreign oil companies, was willing to enter some kinds of agreements that they would probably have been happy to. But they did not trust him. They wanted a situation, a legal situation, which is watertight, and they wanted international influence over policy in Iraq. And this is what has been offered to them by the war. Now, where are the Iraqi people in all this? The Iraqi people, of course, are not being consulted. interests are not being looked after. Oil is a major issue for Iraq, and it has been really for most of the past century.
The new law has to be passed through the parliament, so isn't that a certain people's representation?
Well, you know what the situation is in Iraq at the moment. This is not a situation where anyone should be making decisions for 30, 40 years for to deal with resources that are natural resources that are going to be exhausted within that short period of time. So it's morally unacceptable for a political establishment at this particular time to make such decisions when people are, you know, when there's so much blood on the streets, when there's so much, when really the reality is one of foreign occupation, whether there is a parliament or not, and the parliament in fact is under the protection of the foreign companies, the foreign forces. In any case, procedure has not been followed properly. There's not been really a serious discussion. There's not been a draft that has been open to public scrutiny and a wide discussion. Parliament does not work in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Nowhere should it be working in a vacuum.
Now, how is the situation at the moment? Because we had, during the Saddam era, we had the National Oil Company. That was abolished, I thought I read somewhere. So who's controlling the oil business now?
Well, there are national oil companies at the moment. It wasn't one. At some point in the 80s, the national oil company was broken down into several companies. But they still remain public sector companies.
So they still exist then?
They still exist. Okay. They're all there, and they're public sector companies. And one aspect of the law, of course, is to...
So the old oil law is still active, is still valid?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And in fact, everything, you know, all major required development can take place under the old oil law.
And of course, they're saying there's no need for a new oil law.
Well, there's no need. Well, there are aspects of it that could be positive. For example, re-establishing the National Oil Company would be positive. Would be a positive aspect.
I mean, an overall a company above the separate companies, is that?
Absolutely, to bring together, to integrate the various parts of the sector. That would be a positive aspect. But the problem is here, they're establishing this national oil company, but not giving it the ability to carry out its work. And in fact, using it as a vehicle to farm out the oil resources to the oil companies. The issue here is that they're going to enter into long-term, 30-year or thereabouts agreements with multinational oil companies, which then really become effective owners of the oil resources.
Yes, could you tell something about those? Because in the initial draft proposal from January, there was the so-called production sharing agreements were mentioned, PSAs.
That's right.
And there's a lot of opposition against those. So what's wrong with them?
Well, there's a lot that's wrong with them. First of all, these are agreements which are long-term. And at the moment, there should not be, Iraq should not be entering into long-term agreements with oil companies. They could enter into short-term service agreements, specific projects, specific activities to be carried out for a specific fee. Mm-hmm. That's fine and that's normal and happens everywhere. But long-term agreements where decisions are then taken by the foreign company and the resources are reserved for that foreign company, and in effect meaning that a foreign company owns these resources, is unacceptable in the case of Iraq. It may be in other places where there is, for example, a lot of risk, exploration risk.
Yes, because these so-called PSAs, production sharing agreements, are normally used when the investments required are huge and there's some kind of risk sharing. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Now, where there is, in the case of Iraq, there is so much oil that is known, already discovered by the National Oil Company, and before that as well, but mostly by the national oil companies. Resources that are discovered, fields that are known, their characteristics are known, their reserves are known, their locations, their depth, everything. And now it is really very easy, very and a very low cost to extract that oil.
So Iraq doesn't need foreign investment, or not as much as...
need foreign investment in that area, full stop. It needs foreign technical expertise, and it can buy that. Mm-hmm. It can buy that on the basis of service agreements. There's lots of companies who are willing to cooperate with Iraq on that basis.
Well, in terms of ease of exploration, I would think that Iraq is similar to Kuwait or Saudi Arabia. So don't they have similar production sharing agreements there?
No, they don't. They don't have production sharing agreements in Kuwait or Saudi Arabia, and the Kuwaiti parliament has been rejecting that for some time. The government has been trying to, the Kuwaiti government has been trying to apply them in part of the Kuwaiti industry for political purposes, to get protection from the United States and so on. But the parliament has been rejecting it. Saudi Arabia rejects it outright.
Okay.
Iran rejects it. Why Iraq? That is not acceptable.
It's because they're the weakest, weaker player.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's being imposed on Iraq.
Now, is there a specific favoritism towards the American and English companies, or is it, for example, Total, would they benefit as much a French company then?
Total, as
Exxon? Or?
Total tried to enter into such an agreement with the regime of Saddam Hussein, and, mm-hmm. didn't sign, but it drew up one agreement like that, a 15-year agreement with the regime of Saddam Hussein, and would probably want to come in and make a deal on that and so on. Whether they would get a deal on that basis or not is another matter. The issue is, under the present reality in Iraq, it's clear that the major American companies plus the major British companies, BP and Shell, will be the ones that will get the lion's share of the mm-hmm. big contracts. And really, these companies don't need it. It is just greed. And the world does not need that. Iraq can produce the oil itself with the help of technical advisors, and of course these companies can come in as technical advisors.
Yeah. Now, in February, there was a new version of the law, I think, and these production sharing agreements have been scrapped, and now they talk about exploration administration agreements. But again, there's opposition against those. So.
Well, the reality is that it means exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
There is the term has been
just a new name dropped. For the same
it's
thing.
A new name for the same. In fact, this was the term used under Saddam Hussein's regime for the agreements it tried to enter into.
Mm-hmm.
The question is
it's the same term, but it's a different. The content will be different.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. the content is the same, and the other
the content is the same.
The content will be the same. The other aspect
as the PSAs, not as the we say.
Yes.
The exploration and administration agreements were also used during Saddam's period, is that right?
Well, yes, they tried to enter into these. I mean, Saddam tried to do these to break out of the sanctions. He tried to lure foreign companies into Iraq under these agreements to break out of sanctions. He effectively he failed on that aspect. But that was... And that was really the sort of partly why the big companies would not trust that kind of situation. What they mm-hmm. wanted was a legally tight situation that would bind Iraq for decades, and really Iraqis don't want this.
Yeah, I want to pass to the IFOU. That's the Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions. I think they're opposing the new laws very strongly.
Yeah.
And as early as 10th of August 2003, they had a strike against KBR, I suppose that's Kellogg Brown and Root, so a Halliburton subsidiary.
Right.
Why was that?
Well, as soon as the occupation forces came into Iraq, they brought with them KBR and their contractors and also mercenaries to protect them. Mm-hmm. And they
are a big engineering construction.
They are a big engineering construction company, yeah. And also an oil services company. And they effectively were coming to take over the Iraqi oil fields, mm-hmm. to control them and to run them on the ground. But they couldn't do that without cooperation of the workers in there, and the workers would not cooperate. The workers struck and forced them out of the oil fields.
Why was that? Are they not paid well? Or?
Well, it's not a matter of being paid mm-hmm. well. No, it's they reject the principle that simply a foreign force comes and takes over the oil field. Mm-hmm. The oil, the workers prior to 2003 were paid extremely poorly, mm-hmm. but they have loyalty to their industry, loyalty to their country. And, of course, they will fight for their rights, for better pay, for better conditions, but within the structure of a national industry and within the structure of national control of the oil resources. They've made that absolutely clear. And they have been successful in attaining a number of gains in terms of better pay and better conditions. And but also they are not oblivious to what happens to the oil industry, how it's disposed of, how the resources are disposed of by the government.
Yeah. So you had Hassan Juma, head of the IFOU, visiting London a couple of weeks ago, and he says, amongst other things, that the oil law undermines the unity of Iraq.
That's right.
An important point, I think. Why is that?
Very important point. The oil law leaves things vague completely, and it's open to all sorts of interpretations. The basic thing is it allows regions, provinces and regions, administrative provinces and regions, to enter into long-term agreements, to enter into contracts with foreign oil companies.
I think to give things a name, we're talking about the Kurds in the north and the Shiites in the south. Is that it? That they can separate?
Well, you can
set up their own business separately. Is that?
That's right. Yeah. You can use those terms, but reality is it's specific administrative units, mm-hmm. Whether it's controlled by this or that or the other, and who, you know, what Kurds, what Shias, or what others, you know, it's not, when you say Kurds, is it all the Kurds, or is it specific political groups, what are we talking about? But still, it is specific administrative units under the control of particular political groups, militias, local influential groups. These ones will be entering into agreements with very loose kind of overall supervision from mm-hmm. The center. And really, these local administrative units don't have the long established technical and managerial expertise mm-hmm. That the Iraqi oil administration has. Over a very long period of time. You see, Iraq's oil was nationalized in 1972. When it was nationalized in 1972, the major fields, which were then in the Kirkuk area, the major fields had four foreign workers only in 1972. The entire industry was run by Iraqis as far back as then, and in fact as far back as the 1950s. It was overwhelmingly run by Iraqis. So now we are told that Iraqis can't run the oil industry. And in reality, a situation is created whereby Iraqis really can't run that oil that industry. Because if the running is going to be done by a small local authority somewhere.
And they will need the expertise of abroad.
Absolutely, they will need the foreign expertise.
Now, is that the responsibility of the invaders? Because there's also internal forces, as you, like you mentioned, that would favor the breakup of the country and having their own little empire.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But the invading forces prefer to ignore the reality of an Iraqi national identity, Iraqi national forces. They don't deal with these. They only deal with forces that are divisive, and they discourage any forces that transcend those kinds of differences.
We found a letter from you to the Guardian dated 16 January, so around the publication of the draft version of the law, and you criticize Bahram Saleh, Deputy Prime Minister in particular. Why is that?
Well, he's been in charge of much of economic policy and oil policy in Iraq, and of course the man has not got economic expertise or oil expertise. So what we have here is someone who's closely related to the occupation. He was one of the earlier proponents of invasion of Iraq, even prior to the 2003 invasion. He has cooperated fully with the occupation, and his policy has been all the way to carry out an economic program.
The sellout.
A complete sellout of and really destruction of any national economic policy. It's following the IMF and USAID directives.
So, what's next? What will happen now? Because I think the parliament is on vacation now.
Yes.
And then they come back in September or so, and then the law is going to be pushed through parliament. Is that right?
Well, there's going to be an attempt. I mean, there's been an attempt to push it through parliament, and there's going to be more attempts to do that. But there's also strong opposition, and there's popular opposition. There's opposition in parliament. There is also divisions amongst the various groups in parliament. The ones who are supporting the law are really supporting it, not because they believe it's in the best interest of Iraq. They're supporting it for their own sectional interests, and they're trying to get the most out of that law for their own sectional interests. So they're disagreeing amongst themselves, whereas the opposition is very clear. The opposition is saying that this is not in the interest of Iraq, and the opposition to the law is really united over this issue.
We in the West, we hear always in the news it's about Kurds and Sunnis and Shiites, and then maybe someone will say, well, the Sunnis, who've got everything to lose with the with the breakup of a national oil company, they will be opposing this law, and then the Kurds and the Shiites in the South, they will favor it. Do you agree with that, or is that?
Well, no, I don't agree with that. You see, when you talk of Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds, which Sunnis, which Shiites, which Kurds? These are not homogeneous groups. And what is their political program? What is their economic program? Do they really? I mean, does someone want to look after the interest of, say, 14? Is there a particular force which really represents 14-15 million Shiites in Iraq? What is that force which represents all of their interests and really looks after them in this way? When you talk of that level, this is really obscuring the differences amongst groups. So really, are we talking about the Shia merchants? Are we talking about the poorest Shias? Are we talking about the farmers, the workers? Who are we talking about in that context? Of course, there are groups which use these categories to try to advance their interests. And let us look at who these groups are, what interests they are advancing. Yeah. And there are others who are looking at the situation in different ways. But the reality now is that the predominant form of political activity is the armed political activity, where really intellectuals, thinking people are sidelined in Israel in this regard. But over the oil law, this has been somewhat reversed. Yeah. There is a very substantial opposition which cuts across all kinds of groups of people.
Yeah. I would like to end with the opposition abroad, which you are part of. So, is that significant? What is the impact you have?
Well, you say I'm a part of. I'm abroad.
You oppose the law. You're living abroad.
Of course,
so.
I'm critical of the government. I'm critical of their specific activities that they're doing. I'm against the occupation. I demand.
But do you have any impact on the local politics in the UK and other people in the US, for example?
Well, we have contacts with people. We work with like-minded people. We think that there is really substantial international sympathy for Iraq and for the people of Iraq, and this is not being well harnessed. It's not being well directed. So far, and I think to some extent we need to improve the understanding of Iraq and the situation of the people of Iraq so that this kind of sympathy can be effective. If Iraq is looked at as really groups of people who are killing each other and want to kill each other, then we have no hope. That is not the reality of Iraq. And the reality is that there are gangs and thugs and militias and terrorists, and there are these have been nurtured and have been really encouraged by the reality of occupation. But there is also a people who are looking for much better lives, and they have movements, historic movements, and they can come together.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there, Mr. Mahdi.